Well, hello, and welcome to the Growth Mindset Podcast. Join me, Sam Harris, on my journey of curiosity and growth. I have conversations with some of the world's most fascinating humans, from billionaires to Olympians, and most everyone in between, such as suspiciously happy people and even a hitman. Success isn't just for successful people, it is earned and you can earn it too. I find out how ordinary people become extraordinary to fuel your own growth mindset. So welcome to the podcast. Today we have Nate Bailey, who was a first lieutenant in the army and has since done quite a few things. He's run many businesses, ran 100 miles in a single accomplishment and written a book called The 100 Mile Mindset. He's raised a ton of money for charity and hosted the Championship Leadership Podcast, which I was on and was a really fun interview. So it's my pleasure to have you here.
Yeah, thanks, Sam. I appreciate it, man. It's awesome.
So as your experience in the army, how did you get to being where you were? Was it like an easy process, or did you have to like really fight to become like a first lieutenant?
When I decided to join the army, it wasn't straight out of high school. I went to college, was playing football, had just finished up playing my last year of football. And once I finished that, I kind of had this little bit of a void. I still had some school to finish up, was kind of looking for that next challenge. And the army happened to be providing some good money for people that were going to college. And so at that time, so I was like 22 when I enlisted and went to boot camp in the summer and went through that, came back home. And then I found out like there's this program to be an officer. And I was like, oh, that would be awesome. Cause I've just always gravitated towards being a leader, whether it was a coach or a captain on my football teams, coaching and teaching degree. All throughout my life, I've always kind of gravitated to these leadership roles. And so I decided to join this. I went through basic, which is hard and challenging, right? And then I decided to join this program to see if I could become an officer. And it was about a year and a half long program. And it was difficult. It was challenging, definitely. But I made it through it and then became a platoon leader. And I was a platoon leader when I got deployed to Kuwait.
Wow. What were the kind of chances of getting through the process when you're doing it?
That's a good question. I would say that probably 50% of us made it through. It wasn't fun, but if you just didn't quit, you were going to make it through. So, yeah.
Did you think of quitting a lot?
Maybe from time to time, but never seriously, because I was in the National Guard. So the first 2 weeks was pretty awful. It was kind of like going through basic training again, because it was super hard on us. And then we had a year of 1 weekend a month, we had training that we had to go to. So I'd leave college, which is fun. And then I'd have to go to this weekend that I knew was just going to really kind of suck, but it was only for a weekend, right? So I knew I could get through that. And then eventually, probably towards the last three quarters of the, let's say 18 months that we had together, they start to kind of lighten up on you, because, you know, you've kind of made it through the, I guess we'll call it the hazing process, right? And now they're easing up on you and treating you almost more like you are an officer at that point, even though you're not quite yet. So that's kind of the progression of it. But I never really seriously considered quitting, no.
So what are the kind of core mindsets and useful things that you learn with all that training, besides like just the basic stuff of like how to fire a rifle and be safe and these things?
Well, in the army, and especially as an officer, you know, just extremely detailed, and you are held to a bit of a higher standard. Your responsibilities are much higher, because as a platoon leader, it's 42 people, and everything really does kind of fall back on you. And so with that just comes this mindset that you really can't take a day off. You can't really ease up too much, because someone is always watching, and it only takes that one misstep to ruin a lot of balance that you've built up over time, right? So just persevering. They make it challenging for a reason in the beginning, because of the responsibilities that you have, because of the role that you're going to be in. They don't want someone to just sneak through that really isn't up to the task. So yeah, going through those experiences is the same reason that I go through the SEAL Fit Kokoro experience or the 100 mile races. I was supposed to run a 135 mile race here in a month, but it got canceled, the shutdown. The reason that I continue to put myself in that is because of the mindset that is required to get through it, to not quit, to persevere. You know, things are going to be hard. You know, you're going to hurt physically. You know, there are going to be times where you're extremely tired and you don't want to move anymore. But when you can put yourself in those situations and persevere and come through the other side, you know, there's a lot of people that don't put themselves in those situations because of those reasons, right? Because they're comfortable. And so what I've called the 100 mile mindset allows me to continue to win in all areas of life.
Cool. Sounds really fascinating. So as in, it kind of teaches you that you can deal with adversity and keep going. And that's where you get like the glory, and it's sort of by dealing with the problems, that's like the best.
it just makes you a better person, right? I mean, to do hard things. It doesn't have to be a 100-mile run. It doesn't even have to be a physically challenge. It could be something that's just really extremely mentally or emotionally challenging, or through business, right? Just getting you outside of your comfort zone. Like, you're building the app and creating relationships, and you got to go have meetings and for investors. And so some of those conversations, those are challenging conversations. There's a lot on the line, and how are you going to step up? And if you have the right mindset coming into those, which I think you do, you're going to be all right. But if you don't, you could miss out on an incredible opportunity.
Yeah, thanks, man. Yeah, I was just thinking about eating porridge for the whole week. And like, I was trying to get other people to do it with me, and everyone was like, oh, I could never do that. And you're like, but you're so good. It's so easy, technically speaking. Like, you just make porridge and then you have it also again for lunch, and then you do it again for dinner. But like, it's just like playing with your mental abilities.
It's funny you say that, because I've been thinking about the carnivore diet has been, I don't know if you've heard of it, but I've been listening to a few podcasts lately. And so it's got me thinking about trying it out for 30 days to see what it would do for me inside of my body. And there's kind of that same conversation with me, like, oh, I couldn't just eat meat and like animal products for 30 days. But of course I could, right?
Yeah, you easily can. It's not so great for the planet, so I probably would urge against it. But like, keto diet for a month, which I think is kind of equally challenging in that sense. But anyway, back to the 100 miles. So how did you get into doing that? So that was, I guess, much later. But was it just you started like doing marathons and things, and then was like, okay, why don't I try like a crazy goal?
That's kind of funny. You know, I did that Seal Fit Kokoro event in 2016, and that was a big catalyst for me.
What's a Seal Fit Kokoro event?
Yeah, Seal Fit Kokoro. It's an event modeled after Navy SEAL Hell Week. So in the US, the Navy SEALs, part of their training is going through what they call Hell Week. They get maybe 3 to 4 hours of sleep over the entire 6-day training. And so it's really literally kind of like hell. And so there's this ex-Navy SEAL, our former Navy SEAL, 20-year retired Navy SEAL, Mark Devine, that created this company called Seal Fit. And then he created this event called Kokoro, originally created it for guys that wanted to become Navy SEALs to help prepare them for the rigorous training that they would have to go through. So he started this Kokoro event, which was a 50-hour event, to give them a small taste of what it was going to be like to go through Hell Week. And then what he found out is a lot of civilians, a lot of people that weren't in the military, that weren't trying to be Navy SEALs, wanted to come to this event too, to see if they had what it took. So that's how I ended up going through, retired active duty Navy SEALs, run the event, and I lost over 45 pounds to get prepared for it. I went through a big change and transformation. It was the first time in a long time that I really set my mind to do something, did all of the required work that was necessary to accomplish it, and then came out the other side and actually was successful. There's 28 people that showed up that first day, and 9 of us finished. And so that was a big one for me, because it was me saying I was going to do something, and then I went and do it. And then about a year and a half later is when I was like, I wonder if I could run 100 miles. And I hadn't been running a little bit.
So what was in this 50 hours and what was in your training?
So the 50 hours, so they do a lot of log PT, which requires a lot of teamwork. So you'll have 5 or 6 guys holding up like this 300-pound log. They'll do sit-ups with it. We'll do squats with it. We'll do whatever. We'll carry it. And there was a time where we probably carried that thing in what they call a front carry. So just imagine your biceps get quite the workout. And we walked like 1.5 miles with this thing, and just holding it for probably over 1 hour, right? And most people would quit. Most people would think that they couldn't actually do that amount of work for that long. But the reality is that we did it, right? Like, we were able to do it. And we had people encouraging us, not nicely, that if we dropped the log, we were going to be in trouble, right? So we did like log PT. We went to the ocean that night, and they had the waves crashing down on us, and they had us crawling around in the sand and carrying sandbags, doing all kinds of different body weight exercises. They put us in the pool for a little bit. We ran, we did burpees, we did a lot of planks. We went back in the water. We carried big, heavy rocks around. We went for a long hike up this big mountain in the middle of the second night with 40-pound sandbags in our backpack and carrying this PVC pipe full of sand that was supposed to kind of replicate a weapon that you were carrying, right? And we had to carry people on a stretcher all the way down the mountain. So that's kind of what we did for 52 hours. I forget all of the things that we did, but essentially we were moving and getting pushed physically, mentally for 52 hours straight.
Sounds intense. How much did you sleep at the end of it?
I guess I was probably off this high coming out of it, and I didn't sleep right away. I was up, I think, a total of like 65 hours before I went, and then kind of just hit me and I was like, all right, it's time to go to bed. But I slept probably 12 or 13 hours, and then I kind of woke up like, all right, you know, so I thought I might sleep a little bit longer than that. But 12 to 13 hours is a lot of sleep though, too. So
it does sound super intense, and I guess it replicates kind of like what could happen in like an emergency situation if you're sort of fighting for your life or something, but it seems like a lot.
The show today is brought to you by Praxis, a legitimate alternative to a college degree. They'll get you a great job without the cost, basically. Praxis is a six-month course in skills that you need to land a job in marketing, sales, or operations. And graduates from Praxis get a starting salary of roughly 50k after graduation, normally. And you pay no fees until you're hired. So I just think it's a really good way to get an education without all the costs. And I really believe that education is hugely overpriced, and like a college degree doesn't even teach you all the relevant skills that you need anyway. And it's much better to spend that time in a job earning money than it is being away from the things that you're going to be doing and just kind of wasting your time at a college paying crazy fees to learn out-of-date style information that you don't really need. So I'm a huge believer in proving your skills by doing rather than saying. And a formal education means that you have a document that says you might be good at something, whereas Praxis gives you the time to actually do the things that show you are good by giving you experiences to learn from them. You can find out more on their homepage, discoverpraxis.com. You can also get a free ebook about Praxis to find out if this is the kind of thing for you at discoverpraxis.com/show notes. So that was Praxis, a legitimate alternative to a college degree.
So then what kind of training did you have to do for that? Do you like kind of marathons as training?
Well, yeah, there is no substitute for training, right? I decided in March of 2018 that I was going to see if I could run 100 miles. And so I picked a race like 3 months away from that. So in June was the first attempt.
So what kind of level of fitness were you when you decided to do this? Were you kind of already running kind of 10 miles regularly?
I was really kind of coming off the couch. I was running a little bit, a few miles, probably nothing crazy. So yeah, I definitely ramped it up and I had a coach. And so I would just focus more on time than distance. So in my training, I at least an hour a day to 2 hours a day of running. And then on the weekends, I would try and get a longer run in, right? Maybe a 4 hour run or something like that. And so I got to the first race and they have cutoff times. So you got to get to certain checkpoints by certain times. Otherwise, if you're going too slow, they'll cut you off because you have 30 hours to run 100 miles. And we thought we were doing all right, but we actually were behind a little bit and we could have picked up our pace if we needed to. But again, we thought we were doing okay. And that was really my fault as a leader to not know what the cutoff times were exactly. And again, it was my first race. So it's a massive learning point for me. But we got to the 100K, which is about 62 or 3 miles checkpoint at 18 hours and 10 minutes. And then I took some time to change some clothes, get something to eat. And we left about 18 hours and 30 minutes. And they're like, hey, where are you going? They pulled me off the course. They're like, you missed the cutoff. I'm like, what? I had no idea. Really, like I was feeling good. I thought we were on our way out to continue running. And they said, no, you missed it. The cutoff was 18 hours. And I came in at 18:10. And so I had no idea. We didn't know. We thought we were good. So that was a massive learning lesson for me there. And then decided to sign up for another one in Cleveland, Ohio, a month and a half later in July. And I made it about 76 miles and my body just kind of gave out. I just so happened to choose two of the courses that were qualifying courses for one of the hardest foot races in the country called the Western States. And so they had a lot of elevation. So it was not just running 100 miles, but it was running and traversing steep terrain up and down. So I learned there too. And then again, there was a point in my life where I would have said, hey, you did great. You went 75 miles or you went 63 miles. I had a lot of people tell me, hey, awesome job. Like, I can't believe you did that. It's okay. And I would have probably been somebody that would have listened to that at some point, but it wasn't 100 miles, right? And so I was committed to running 100 miles. And again, that's kind of where this mindset comes. And so in October of that year, I signed up for the Pony Express, which is in Utah, and accomplished it. I finished 100 miles in 29 hours on the third attempt. I wish I could have just finished it on the first attempt. But hey, there was a lot of lessons that I learned throughout that experience.
Wow. Yeah, you said you were doing like a longer one that you signed up for.
Yeah, so it was called the Denali 135 in Alaska, and they just decided that they can't do it. So next year I'll be going. That kind of just pushed everybody to next year. Yeah.
So you're just like keeping like a regular training then at the moment?
Yeah, I have some other events that I'm signed up for. But again, with this year, it's hard to tell, right? With the shutdown with Corona, what's going to happen? I got an Ironman that I'm supposed to do in September, but I'm not sure that one's going to go either. And then there's this 50-mile ruck, which you wear a backpack with weight in it, and then you ruck, and that's a 50-miler in November. So I'm hoping that we're able to do that one in November, but who knows, right? Other than that, yes, I'm continuing to keep a good base of fitness.
Yeah, I'm hoping to start doing some more things like that, super into these kind of things. But like, I broke my leg quite badly last year. And so like, my leg's now like a whole inch shorter. So it's like, it's really off balance when I try to run. And I was doing some running. I've only just started, managed to start doing like some distance, like over an hour. And I don't know, I just stopped being able to like walk for 2 weeks again because my other leg started like seizing up and it was just doing something weird. So I kind of need to get like some kind of coach that can teach you how to run in a way that doesn't mess yourself up when you have like odd legs. So we'll see. Otherwise, maybe I just do like cycle rides that are really long or something. I guess, or I do things that like test you because it's kind of fun.
Yeah, me too. I'm a big proponent of it. Again, it doesn't have to be crazy 100-mile runs like I do, but just pushing yourself physically, there's so many benefits to it. I really think it's the key to thriving in all. It forces me to raise all levels of my life, not just my physical. When I'm testing myself and staying in great shape, you know, discipline, commitment, right? I don't want to take time away from my business. I don't want to take time away from my kids or my wife and in order to run 100 miles. And so because of that, I got to be creative. And there's a lot of early morning runs or late night runs so that I'm not taking time away from the other things that are just as important. So which also forces me to be focused and present in those other areas as well when I'm there, which has been a big shift for me to just be really present with whatever it is that I'm doing, which is just my results have increased because of that.
Yeah, definitely. So then you said you've run quite a few businesses.
Yeah, I owned a CrossFit gym for a few years. I also was in the insurance business for 14 years. I was an insurance broker, CrossFit. I own multiple rental investment properties around the country still today. So that's another business of mine. And then, of course, the coaching, speaking, podcasting.
That's interesting. CrossFit gym, how come you stop doing that? Because that looks like quite an ideal kind of lifestyle business to own, and it seems like people that run them are pretty happy.
Yeah, it was kind of one of those things where I'd had the insurance business for a while and it was pretty established, and I had some partners in the CrossFit gym and this just didn't work out very well. And so it was kind of, you know, I could do two things just really kind of sloppy, or I could sell the CrossFit gym and focus again back into the growing the insurance business, which was the more established, more profitable business at the time. And the partnerships weren't working out. So that's kind of how that happened. Had it been maybe a little bit different, I would definitely see myself being a CrossFit gym owner more than an insurance agent. But it seems to have worked out pretty well to where I am today. So.
And then the rental properties, how did you end up earning quite a lot? So you kind of just get mortgages as you're going and then can buy more, or did you get some money to be able to like buy them outright?
Yeah, so it depends on how you buy them and what you can get them at. When I first got into the investment property world, it was really kind of right around 2009-10, which is right after that, the big crash, and there was a lot of foreclosures. I picked up four or five properties for kind of steals of deals, which meant that when I bought them, I had immediate good chunks of equity in them, which allowed me to kind of leverage one to buy another, right? So I did some of that and they turned out all right. I've sold three or four of those and then taken some of the proceeds from the sale of those to roll into bigger properties. And so that's kind of how I've continued to grow that portfolio.
That's fascinating. And how did you get into insurance in the first place? That seems like a not obvious thing to get into. Are you passionately annoyed with the market or something? Or?
Yeah, not too many people are ever really happy when they're calling. They're usually complaining about their bill or an accident or something like that. So at the time that I got into the business, I was in different sales positions and was fairly good at sales and created a friendship with my insurance agent, and he was looking to hire somebody. And so at that time, I needed a job and I was like, yeah, I'll give this a shot. This seems interesting. And then I did that, was doing well and decided I wanted to open my own agency. So went out on my own and that's kind of grew from there. But ultimately, I loved the part about being a business owner and the income that I was able to create and the flexibility that I had to be there for my kids and take days off if I needed to. But I wasn't too excited about insurance. Yeah.
Interesting. And then now that you do business coaching and such, what are the kind of things that you really focus on?
With the clients that we have right now, I mean, we really do focus on their life, right? Like their marriage, their relationship with their kids, their physicality, their spirituality, and inside of their business as well. Most of the conversations are usually either around business, physical, or relational, right? Just things going on in their life, get a different perspective, help them with their mindset, help them to create new habits, rituals, routines for themselves, accountability. What I'm really great at is leadership, teamwork, business, and, you know, of course, all really kind of driven through showing up physically, pushing myself, becoming a person of my word, and helping my clients to become people of their word as well. That's the most powerful thing I think someone can do is like be someone that when they tell someone they're going to do it, you just know you can count on it happening, right? Because unfortunately, I think that's rare these days and it shouldn't be, right? How powerful would it be if everybody lived that way?
very powerful. It's very easy to say you're going to do something and people actually kind of follow up and do stuff. It's like kind of like it's in a way. It's partly like with this, very delusional and partly stupid. What do you tell someone? What's the most effective lesson that you give them that makes people show up in this way and actually be a more reasonable human being that's useful to work with?
I did a podcast actually on this topic called Integrity Bank. I did 100 episodes. It's still out there. But so the Integrity Bank is something that I kind of created, which was just like we all have a financial bank account, right? If it's withdrawn or if it's overdrawn, if there's no money in the account, you can't buy anything. And so the Integrity Bank is the same thing. It's just showing up every single day and doing the little things, right? Doing the small things that you say you're going to do. Like if you say you're going to get up and work out today, you make sure that you work out like before you go to bed. And so you just do these little things every single day. And every day you do something that you said you would. It's like putting a deposit into your account. The more that you show up every day, the greater the deposit grows. Because there's going to be days when you have to make a withdrawal, right? There's going to be days, something's going to happen, life's going to happen. And I use the workout example because that's an easy one. You don't get the workout in for whatever reason, right? It just didn't happen. It's okay as long as the gap between when that doesn't happen and the next time is greater and greater. That's the goal. So that you're making these deposits. So when there is a withdrawal, there's funds there available for it. Most people go through life and they continue taking withdrawals from relationships in business. And that's why they wake up and they're not fulfilled and they're like, man, life sucks, right? Well, it's because they're not a person of their word. And it doesn't matter if you haven't been a person of your word up until today. Like you can decide to change it. It doesn't mean that people's thoughts or you are going to change overnight. But as you start to do the little things every single day, people are going to start to see that. And then you can start to change how other people look at you and see you by that shift. But yeah, just start today. Don't beat yourself up about how you've shown up in the past. You know, make the decision today and make small little commitments, promises to yourself, and then do it.
Yeah. I'm glad I asked that question. That was a really fascinating. I'm a big fan of that. And I mean, it kind of relates into karma and being a good person as well, I think. But yeah, sort of respect for yourself and everyone else around you. It's a huge lesson, important mindset there. Do you ever feel like you've sold out a bit on going into insurance and that you should have done something more like aligned with your like purpose and interests?
I don't dwell on that, I guess. So I've never really thought about that because I think we go through life and sometimes we don't know why we're doing the things that we're doing. And then you get to a point down the road and you look back, you're like, oh, that's why I was doing that because it helped me and positioned me to be who I am today as a coach, as a leader. So having the experience of running an insurance agency and brokerage and the business that I was able to create, and then able to sell has afforded me to do some other things in my life. So I don't really look at it back with regret, but just like, oh yeah, it also gives me the experience so that when I'm coaching others, like, hey, I was a business owner. I ran a successful insurance agency. I had employees. Like I had a lot of experiences that now I'm able to coach others on because they're going through the same thing.
Thanks very much. So yeah, what is one of your earliest memories?
It's a little bit funny that you say that because I was thinking about some of my earliest memories, to be honest, which is really weird that you asked that right now. Yeah, my biological father has not been a part of my life. So I don't know what made me think of this, to be honest. I ended up talking to my sister on the phone last night. I was thinking about family maybe. But so I was trying to think like, what's the earliest memory I have of him? And like, there's kind of one moment that I remember. I had to be super young, 2, 3 maybe. And then that made me think about my grandfather too, because my mom got divorced from my father maybe after a year or so. I don't even know exactly how long they were married. So he took off. He wasn't a part of her life. We were living with my mom's parents, my grandparents, and my grandfather, who is no longer living, but a great role model of mine, like somebody that just really kind of stepped into that father role for me. They were a big part of our life too. And so I have some really great memories of them as well. But even thinking about that, I was like, man, there's some years there that we were there where I don't really have memories of that, right? So some of my earliest memories would be that, like trying to remember the time, maybe one of the only times that I can really remember my actual father in my life, which is like a very faint memory. I have this image of us and my mom in the park. And I also had the thought that I remember even at that young of an age that there was something off. It's interesting that I can think of that, remember that, meaning like there was something off in the relationship, right? I didn't really know it, but I'm sure it was right around the time where they were kind of parting ways and we're meeting my dad in the park and we just hung out for an hour or something. And then he took off and I'm back with my mom, right? So that's one of the earliest memories I have.
Yeah, it's kind of sad to hear about, but you can see how that kind of impacts your life and the kind of strange stuff that you do pick up on as a kid and what you might have been thinking. Fascinating. Thanks. And then the other sort of question that I really like asking is, what's the kindest thing that someone has done for you?
I did an Ironman in 2008. My first child was just born just less than a month before that, probably 3 weeks before that. So I went to Arizona to do this Ironman, and I didn't have any family with me because, of course, my wife had just had the child and she's a brand new baby. So they had to stay home and just like take care of the baby. And so I'm doing this Ironman by myself, and it feels like everybody else in this race has all these groups of supporters, right? But I do just remember how nice people were, and they would like kind of cheer me on, because you would have this race bib on that has your last name on it. And so they'd be like, oh, you know, keep going, Bailey, or whatever, or keep up, or great work. And so just small acts of kindness from strangers that definitely helped me push. That was one of the more challenging things I had done. Well, that was the most challenging physical thing I had done in my life up to that point. And it was awesome to get those little pushes from people that I didn't even know, that didn't really have to do that, right? So that's an example.
Oh, nice. Definitely. Because you can feel a little bit silly when you're like watching a marathon or something, like encouraging other people, but it's so nice when people are doing it.
Yeah, and you totally don't expect it. And it really kind of tends to come at the right time. I remember you just like kind of a little boost of energy of like, oh, all right, let's go.
All right, thanks. That was awesome. I like that. And then your stuff about the integrity bank was awesome. So I was going to say, like, what was your one piece of advice as a parting sort of, this has been like the most useful thing you've learned, but maybe that was already it.
Yeah, that's definitely kind of the message I would leave with most people. I have a sign on my wall actually that says every single day. And so that's just a great reminder for me. Just like, just show up today, just start today. Don't worry about what's happened in the past. You know, the biggest person to be your word to is yourself first, right? Because if you tell yourself you're going to wake up at 5 a.m. to go work out, and you typically get up at 7 or 8 and you hit the snooze button, no one else knows other than you, right? So you continue to not be your word to yourself. And so that's the most important, powerful person to be your word to first is yourself. And then as you do that, then you can start to become your word to others as well down the road. But just do the small little steps, make those small little deposits every day.
Cool. What is on this poster exactly? Because I might write it down.
it's literally every single day.
Nice. Feeling motivated. And on that, I'm going to go show up and go for a big bike ride, because I promised myself I was going to do that. Thanks.
You bet. Yeah. I love it. That's great.
I hope you enjoyed the episode as much as I did. My goal for this podcast is to help make people happier and wiser. And I'm also working on a few other projects in the podcasting space to achieve the same thing. I run the Wiser Than Yesterday podcast with a friend, where we read and discuss a great nonfiction book a week. We talk about things like philosophy, psychology, the economy, self-improvement, and business. Books such as The Black Swan, Anti-Fragile, Invisible Women, How to Win Friends and Influence People. It's a great resource. Most recently, I've been building an app, Syncify. It's really to level up your podcast experience. You can connect with your friends in the app and listen to the same things. So you can listen live in real time with each other, or create shared playlists and catch up at your own pace. You learn so much more by discussing ideas with friends. It's really silly to listen alone. You can also discover and share brilliant episodes with ease without having to try and recommend podcasts in different apps and just it all getting lost and confused. So it's also good for combating isolation and mental health. I personally find social media quite antisocial, and I just don't find it easy to reach out to friends to chat for no real reason. But I do love doing things with other people, and listening to the same content means that I can naturally talk about the same things, and it just gives me that friend time without going out of my way. So I really hope that it can help you, and I just would love you to try out the beta version and help us build this. And obviously do invite your friends. It's all about friends. So you can find out more about Syncify app by going to syncifyapp.com. Thanks for listening. Congratulations on listening to a whole episode of the Growth Mindset podcast. Before you race into another podcast, try pausing. Ask yourself, what have you learned? What could you change? How will you make that change happen? Did you press pause? Knowledge is useless without action. What did you learn? What should you change? And how will you make that change happen? You can tell us what you learned by contacting us through the website, growthmindsetpodcast.com, and feel free to connect with us or our guests, or just peruse the show notes. Our Instagram is @growthmindsetpodcast, or follow me @samjamsnaps for a daily reminder to stop using Instagram. If you enjoy random acts of kindness and want to support the show, you can support us on Patreon or leave us a review on iTunes, and you'll make me very happy.
And with that, keep learning and keep growing.